Welcome to the 305th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, a preview of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and a look back at the NBA over the past week. Let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media handles. Those are at 4th and 24. We will start in college basketball, where Patrick went 2-2 with his weekend predictions. And in the NBA, Patrick went 4-0 with his weekend predictions. That brings his record to 6-2 for this past week. And overall, Patrick's record is 1,298-812. That is a 61.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, I thought I did pretty well. All the games were on Friday in both leagues. I picked three Big Ten tournament games just because it was in the quarterfinals. I picked Michigan State beating Oregon. That was a proper pick. And then I picked Wisconsin over UCLA, which was the other win that I got. And then I picked Illinois to beat Maryland. I had liked how they played against Iowa. They looked unstoppable in that game. And then, as is the typical form of Illinois this season, the very next game, they looked terrible. They couldn't grab a rebound against Maryland. They couldn't score. So much credit to Maryland's defense for that, too, by the way. It's not like Illinois wasn't playing they weren't playing well, but they weren't playing horrible. They just got stymied by a really good defense by Maryland. And then Boise State beat New Mexico in the Mountain West Conference semifinals, which was another prediction that I got wrong. That was a 72-69 game, a very close game, and then it set up one game with two potential bid stealers between Boise State and Colorado State in that championship game, which Colorado State eventually won and secured the auto bid for that conference. Then in the NBA, a lot of injuries going on, so it's very hard to predict games that are actually interesting. I mean, this is even, I tried to avoid the games that were impacted by injuries by not picking the Mavericks, et cetera, et cetera. But then the Lakers had pretty much everybody out against the Nuggets. The Nuggets won that game 131-26. I predicted that correctly. The Clippers beat the Hawks 121-98. I don't think there were too many major injuries impacting that game, but don't honestly know. Then the Cavs beat the Grizzlies 133-124. If there's one team that you can count on to be healthy and just keep rolling through other teams, it's the Cavs. Although the Grizzlies have had a pretty good season as well, and they've done pretty much the same thing. They've stayed pretty healthy all year. But yeah, I got that one correct as well. And then the Wolves beat the Magic 118-111, which was another correct prediction that I had. The Timberwolves on a bit of a roll recently, so definitely rolling with the hot hand there, and they come away with the victory. The Magic have been kind of sliding for a little bit, although they've been playing a little bit better recently, and then they did end the Cavs' win streak later this weekend, but couldn't get the win on Friday.
All right, well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend, as always, will be posted on our social media handles on Thursday. Now let's turn our attention to what some view as the best 3 weeks of the year, or at least maybe the best weekend of the year. Let's do a preview of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Patrick, first, any general thoughts you have on the tournament, the bracket, etc.?
Well, I think obviously the main point of contention with everybody is West Virginia's exclusion and North Carolina's inclusion. I will say I really don't care about North Carolina getting in. It's just the fact that it came at the expense of West Virginia. I really felt that, I had said this all weekend to friends and just in general, even in my head, just thinking about it, there were, in my opinion, six teams that could have gotten two spots. And that came down to North Carolina, Texas, Ohio State, Boise State, Xavier, and Indiana. Those six teams should have been the six teams up for the final two spots. I had North Carolina third in that conversation. I had them right behind Indiana. I thought it was close. I thought Xavier was ahead of them, which they were. But West Virginia I had as a last four buys team. I mean, I knew that the Colorado loss put them in some danger, but the committee cited the Tucker DeVries injury as one of the reasons why they didn't make the tournament. But Tucker DeVries played eight games this year. They didn't really build any significant parts of their resume with him not playing. They built most of at eight games, he missed. So, yeah, they built basically all of their resume without him playing. They went 19-13. He only played the first eight games. They lost to Pitt by 24 with him playing. They lost to Louisville with him playing. They were 6-2. They had a win over Arizona, and they had a win over Gonzaga in the Bahamas. But at the same time, again, an embarrassing loss to Pitt, and a loss to Louisville, which was also in the Bahamas. So did they really do much with him? Not necessarily. I mean, obviously the Gonzaga and the Arizona wins age well in terms of the net, and the Louisville and Pitt wins a little less so. But they're all four of those teams, well, Pitt faded out of the conversation, obviously, but the three of those four teams were tournament teams, and Pitt played like a tournament team for the first half of the season. And then when you look at the rest of their resume, they beat Kansas on the road. That was without him playing. That was also without Imani Hansberry, I believe, or maybe Toby Okoni. One of their big men was out. They beat Iowa State. They got a quad one win at Cincinnati. I mean, this resume, it's not the most impressive. It doesn't necessarily jump off the page, but without DeVries playing, they still got quality wins. I mean, winning at Allen Fieldhouse is something that not a lot of teams do. And beating Iowa State is obviously one of the better wins you could have claimed this year in the Big 12. So that exclusion just didn't really make much sense to me. And I think it didn't really make a lot of sense to anybody. Like I said, any of the six teams that I had in that last two-in mix, I would have been fine with making in whatever order. It's just that West Virginia shouldn't have been one of the teams that was left out instead. That was my biggest gripe. But in terms of North Carolina and Xavier and Indiana and that whole discussion, I'm going to be quite honest. The committee, and you know, I've talked to you about this off podcast when they did their top 16 reveal, they were pretty consistent in that they were just basically going by, if you were to add up all the metrics and give it an average, the average metric rank was the best indicator of where a tournament team would be seeded early on in the year. And the only teams they made exceptions for were teams that either had really good resumes and wins, which I'll get to later with another team, or an SEC team, which totally lines up with the fact that they left Texas in and they put North Carolina in, because if you actually look at it, no offense to Indiana, but their metrics are not up to the level that North Carolina's or Xavier's are at. I mean, Xavier, 45th in the net, a 50.3 resume average and a 39.7 predictive average. North Carolina, a 45 resume average, 36th in the net, and a 31.3 quality average. So very, 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 very much so within the bounds of an at-large team for North Carolina, if you're only looking at metrics. Now, do I agree with the fact that they were in? No, because they had 11 games against tournament teams, and they lost all of them, except for one, against UCLA, which was, at this point, I mean, no offense to UCLA, but UCLA is the 27th best team in the country, according to literally every metric, except for Torvik. They are 25th in Torvik and everything else. KenPom, they're 27, BPI, they're 27, Net, they're 27, KPI, SOR, strength of record, and WAB, all 28. So they are the 27th or 28th best team in the country. That is not an impressive win, to get one late game win against UCLA on a neutral court all the way back in December. That's not enough to hold up a resume. And I just don't see that as being a resume that you could say is good enough for the tournament, regardless of what the metrics say, because they also lost a quad three game. With Xavier, they didn't necessarily get any great wins that North Carolina didn't have, but you know what? They beat Marquette, which is good enough. I mean, beating Marquette is the equivalent of beating UCLA. They both beat a 7 seed. Xavier also stayed close against Marquette twice, probably should have beaten them on the neutral court, and they got that win on the road, not on a neutral site, not that early in the season. And I think overall, I'm not too... Not too mad about them being in. I had them in, obviously. But then you look at Indiana and you say, okay, these teams also went sub-500 against the top two quadrants. Xavier was 9-11. North Carolina was 9-12. Indiana was 9-13, but two of those wins were against really good teams. I mean, they went on the road and beat Michigan State, and they also beat Purdue, who the committee gave a 4 seed. So they beat two protected seeds, which is something that neither North Carolina nor Xavier could say. They can maybe have that gripe that they should be in, but then the committee, on the other hand, went with the team that had even better wins, which was Texas, who had 7 quad one wins and 3 quad one A wins. So I get it overall. I just don't get the West Virginia thing. I understand Xavier, Texas, and North Carolina, but I don't think one of them should be at the expense of West Virginia. I think that West Virginia, if you're going to make the good wins argument for Texas, West Virginia has a better argument on the good wins front. They have 4 quad 1A wins themselves. And then I think, you know, for the Indiana conversation, I think I honestly get Indiana being below Texas. I mean, they're kind of the same resume, but one of them's a big one of them's an SEC team and one of them's a Big Ten team. So the SEC team got a ton more good wins, a ton more quad one wins than the Big Ten team did. But, you know, the other thing with Texas is that I thought that they profiled really similarly, A, to last year's Oklahoma team that missed the tournament, and B, to the team 2 years ago from Texas A&M that Buzz Williams complained about because they didn't make the tournament because of a bad non-conference strength of schedule. And they tried to build their resume all by storming through the SEC tournament. They got all the way to the finals, and they lost in the finals. But that team didn't make the tournament. And I think a lot of gripes from Buzz Williams was that the committee just doesn't care about the conference tournament. And I thought that that would be the same thing with Texas this year, but that was not true. Texas picked up two of its best wins this year in the conference tournament, and they were rewarded for it. So I was a little bit shocked by that in terms of the overall seeding. And then the other thing is, I'm not entirely convinced that the committee didn't just straight up switch Memphis and Louisville. Honestly, I mean, there is a very, very, very good chance that that happened. The thing that doesn't make any sense here is that Clemson got a 5 seed, despite Louisville and Clemson having the exact same conference record, and Louisville beat Clemson twice. They're pretty much identical in everything. I just don't get the fact that Louisville had a better resume average than Memphis. Memphis's entire resume, their overall resume, I should say, was dependent on how much the committee valued their resume metrics. Memphis's resume average was 17. Louisville's was 14.7. So there is no universe where Louisville had a worse resume than Memphis. It just does not make any sense. Louisville was 23rd in the net. Memphis was 50th. Memphis had two quad three losses. Louisville went 15-7 in quad one and quad two. Memphis went 11-3. Obviously, that's really what anchored their resume, but the two quad three losses undo a lot of the progress from the 11-3 record, whereas Louisville was very, very clean, 10-1 in quad two, 5-6 in quad one. I just don't see it, honestly. Louisville, again, had better resume metrics, had a better net by 27 spots. And also, if you're looking at predictive averages, which they do look at, Memphis's predictive average was 53 and Louisville's was 23.3. So that one just doesn't make any sense. It's the West Virginia thing and those two seeds. Those don't make any sense. Whether you want to compare Louisville to Memphis directly or whether you want to compare Louisville to Clemson, who they profile very similarly to because they're in the same conference and everything, either way, doesn't make much sense. Other than that, though, I thought the committee did a pretty good job. I think that they did the same thing that they always do to the Big Ten champ if they're in a similar position, which is they get a 5 seed if you kind of trend late and don't build your resume enough. I know that a lot of people think Michigan should be on the 4 line. I did have Michigan as the last 4, but I also get that, you know, Michigan before the conference tournament was, I think, 3-4 since the committee reveal, and Purdue was also 3-4 after the committee reveal and before the conference tournament. And the difference is Purdue was at number 7 on the committee's initial reveal. Michigan was at 14. So it's not really that surprising in all reality. But other than that, I didn't really have any gripes with the actual bracket, other than the fact, and I'll move on now to the actual tournament. My only problem is that all the teams I thought were good lower-seeded picks to make it to the Final Four are all in one region, and they're all in the region with the 1 seed that I thought is the most likely to make the Final Four. That is my biggest problem with this bracket. I think Duke was going to be the 1 seed that I picked against because of the fact that we don't know Cooper Flagg's status. Well, we know his status. He will be playing, but we don't know how healthy he'll be. Malik Brown, kind of same situation. I think he'll play, but he's been kind of dealing with that shoulder injury throughout the year, so we don't know for sure. But the problem is, if I were to pick a team that was going to beat Duke, I would have told you, from the 4 line, I would have picked Maryland. From the 3 line, I would have picked Texas Tech. And unfortunately, they're both stuck in the West with Florida. It's really hard for me to pick against Florida, but I will say, I ended up with a Final Four of Auburn, Texas Tech, Alabama, and Houston. For the record, I do think that Auburn and Houston are the weakest 1 seeds, and I do think that Duke and Florida are better teams overall, but I think that Duke has the injury concerns. Duke also has the best 2 seed, in my opinion, which is Alabama, and that's who I have, obviously, as I said, going to the Final Four instead of them. And then I just think that Florida's region is too much of a gauntlet that they're going to run through it cleanly. I mean, they're going to be, in terms of I do think that Florida, honestly, is, like, if you ask me to say, there's no other bracket, you don't know the bracket yet, pick a national champion, I would have picked Florida. That would be my team. But the thing is, this bracket, I see three potential games where they lose. I could see them losing to St. John's. I could see them losing to Kansas if Kansas catches fire and somehow makes it all the way to the Elite Eight. I could see them losing to Maryland. And even before that, I could see them losing to UConn. I mean, this is a very talented UConn team as well. The eight seeds this year are very, very good. So I just can't in good faith take them all the way, especially, and I'm saying this as advice if you're in a bracket pool, if every single media personality on ESPN picks the same champion and they're picked in 20% of ESPN brackets, which is the second most, do not pick that team. I mean, you are not going to get any, if you want to win, you're not going to get any value out of picking Florida. You are going to get a lot more value out of the Florida versus the field pick and picking the field. Hell, pick Duke. They're the most popular champion, but everybody seems to be picking Florida as well. I think, in my opinion, you have to avoid those two to get good value out of a bracket. So I will say, from an objective standpoint,
yeah, unless you're going to get lucky in early round games, because it's going to come down to what you picked early round games if everybody's picking the same champ.
From an objective standpoint, Duke and Florida are the two best teams in the country. That is just a fact. However, if I'm picking this from a bracket to try to win a bracket pool, which, of course, why would I not be trying to do that? I have Auburn getting there because I think there is a very good chance, honestly. If there was ever a year that all four one seeds would make the Final Four, this would be the year. These one seeds, I believe... Duke, Florida, and Houston and Auburn all have KenPom ratings of 35 or better. UConn last year was the only team better than 31.17, which was Houston, who was the second best team in the country, and Purdue was at 30.62, and even those two were on a collision course to the title, and everybody thought so. When UConn won it in 2023, they had a net rating of plus 29.86. So there are six teams better than that this year, actually. Alabama has a better rating than 2023 UConn did. Also Tennessee and Auburn, Houston, Florida, and Duke. I say all of this to say that you got to go back a long way to even find any teams that are anywhere near this. In 2021, Michigan has the same rating as Alabama does this year, basically, and they were the third best team in the country, and they were one seed. And then Gonzaga and Baylor, who were on the collision course in the final, and obviously Baylor won. Gonzaga was rated 36.48 or plus 36.48. Baylor plus 33.87. Gonzaga obviously was undefeated until the championship game. So if you want to look for a similar team, Gonzaga that year profiles similarly to Florida. And then Baylor, their net rating is somewhere in between the area of Auburn and Tennessee. So you're looking at four teams that are all in other years runaway championship picks. All four one seeds. So I don't really think you can go wrong with any of those four. However, if you're going to give me a team to pick against, give me the team that has a three seed in their region that's the seventh best team in the country, according to KenPom, which is Texas Tech, and they're in Florida's region, and also the 12th best team in the country has their four seed, and the 11th best team in the country has their two seed. So four top 12 teams all in Florida's region. And by the way, Missouri, even as a six seed down there, is 15th in the country. So a very, very stacked region. And that was honestly my biggest gripe outside of actual tournament seeding. This West region is just too good. It's not fair.
Yeah, well, so speaking of gripes in the West region, the gripes, and again, we're Big Ten, you know, we're Big Ten people, and so we paid a lot of attention to the Big Ten. The biggest gripes coming, besides Michigan fans saying, how can we be a five seed, frankly, to me, that's not that big of a deal. Five versus four. If you win your game, you're playing a 4-5 matchup, and then you're playing the one seed. Assuming.
However, this year the 12 seeds have a very big gap between them and the 13. So it is a big deal.
The biggest, most valid gripes are that, okay, we're the top rated five seed. We played in the conference championship game, on the last game on a Sunday. You send us. We're the top rated five seed. This is Michigan. You send us out west.
To the top-rated 12 seed.
To the top-rated 12 seed. Yeah. Make us play in altitude. You send us out west and make us play on Thursday when we just played on Sunday.
Yeah.
And similarly, Wisconsin, who lost in that championship game, who's a three seed, they also get sent out west and have to play on a Thursday. They had their bags packed for Milwaukee. I heard that they were planning alumni events and everything. They basically thought that they were going to be playing in their home state. They get shipped out west. As you point out, they get shipped out west.
They also play at 10:30 in the morning, they play Montana, who's geared up for the altitude, which is kind of interesting.
So that's, you know, even though Michigan is in, you know, even though Wisconsin's in the East region and Michigan's in the South region, they get shipped out west to play. That's a major gripe. I don't understand how, if you're the top rated 5 seed, you get shipped out there. Maybe it was because you had to avoid people in your conference, but that's not true either because they're in the same bracket as Michigan State. So that to me is the big.
Well,
the big
gripe. I could explain to you for 5 minutes why Michigan actually had to be either in the South or the East. But the one thing that they could have done, which actually would have made more sense, is switched Michigan and Oregon. That would have made a lot more sense. Otherwise, the rest of that they actually had to do, based on rematches and a lot of other things. Trust me, I've run the numbers on this. Michigan couldn't be with Maryland or with Purdue. So that was impossible. They couldn't have been in the West or the Midwest. That's a fact. The problem with Wisconsin, actually, I actually do know as well, which is that BYU could not play in Milwaukee, and BYU had to be paired with Wisconsin as the sixth seed because there were no other Big 12 teams that they could have played.
And BYU can't play on a Sunday, so they have to be a Thursday-Saturday matchup.
Correct. So BYU couldn't have played in Milwaukee, which is my point. That's what I just said about the Thursday-Saturday game. Yeah. Milwaukee is a Thursday, is a Friday-Sunday region, so they couldn't have played then. The only thing they could have done is stuck Kentucky and BYU in the same region. So I think Kentucky is also in a Friday-Sunday, so the only way they could have avoided it is the way that they did it with BYU for Wisconsin's sake. But then the Oregon and Michigan thing, I think that one's just a little weird. That easily could have been Michigan there in the East against Liberty and Oregon against UC San Diego, which would have been obviously more of a geographical matchup that makes sense. But the argument that you could give for that one is that Oregon being in Denver gives them an advantage over Texas A&M in terms of their fans traveling, which is not what they want to do. That's not the intent of how they send the fours and the fives. They don't want the fives to have a geographical advantage. But speaking of that South region, you know, the West and the South are antithetical to me. Florida is the team that I'd want to pick to the Final Four, but has too many Final Four contenders in their region. Auburn is the team that I was going to say I'm going to pick 3-1 seeds, and they're going to be the one seed that I don't pick. But this region does not have any Final Four teams in it, honestly. I think every year there is a region where there is not a Final Four team or a team that should make the Final Four, and someone just has to make it. This is that region this year. Iowa State missing their leading scorer. Michigan State, preseason unranked team. There's never been a Final Four team that was unranked in the preseason and got a top two seed. That has never happened. The farthest any of those teams have gone is the Elite Eight. It doesn't even happen that often. So Michigan State doesn't fit that criteria. They're also not good enough offensively to do that. A&M is the same story as Michigan State. They're a one-dimensional team. They can't shoot. Michigan has the turnover issues that they're going to pop up and plague them at some point. I also, at the same time, don't like that Auburn's playing what should be a five seed in the second round. And if they're not playing a five seed, they're playing Creighton. And I think Creighton has a pretty perfect defensive matchup for Auburn because Creighton likes to play drop coverage. Auburn doesn't shoot from the mid-range. So they're not going to take the shots that Creighton likes to give opponents. That could cause Auburn fits. And if not, they're playing a team that just shouldn't be on that line in the first place. In Louisville, who competed with Duke until the end of that game on Saturday in the ACC Championship game. So no matter what, they get a pretty bad second-round matchup, so I don't like that either. But at the same time, I think Michigan State's too one-dimensional. Iowa State, again, missing Keyshawn Gilbert out for the season, so that doesn't bode well for them at all. Ole Miss just strikes me as a team that isn't going to do much in the tournament. They're a little too balanced. They're not elite at anything. They're ranked below Michigan and KenPom. Obviously, I mean, you know, Ole Miss is a six seed. Michigan's a five, so it makes sense. But, you know, if you just look at this region overall, I mean, Michigan State's at 8 in KenPom. Auburn's at 4, so you have the weakest one seed and the weakest two seed according to KenPom. Iowa State is at 10, so that does make them a stronger three seed than Wisconsin and Kentucky, but that's not saying much. Then you have A&M, who's down in KenPom at 17th, so that's weaker than a four seed should be. The five seed in this region, Michigan, is 25th. Six seed Mississippi is 26th, so that's also weak, way below the region bounds. Marquette's at 28th, which is right where they should be as a seven. It's just really not a good region. I mean, overall, there's just not much to like in this region. And I think also Louisville, funny enough, is the fifth highest rated team in KenPom in this region at 23, despite being the eight seed. They're ahead of the five, the six, and the seven. But I have to say, I really struggle to pick a Final Four team from here. If Iowa State was fully healthy, it'd be Iowa State for sure, 100% for me. But Auburn was the one seed I didn't want to pick to the Final Four, and they're stuck with this region where I see zero teams beating them.
And it's funny that you say that because, you know, you and I talked previously, and others have talked about how there's really a top six dominant, head and shoulders above everybody else teams, and Auburn's in that mix.
But they're also the worst of the one seeds in that mix by far, and they've lost three of their last four.
Well, this is the one region where I didn't have the Elite Eight having all ones and twos. And I tried to pick somebody and to come up with it, and I picked Ole Miss, ironically. I think Ole Miss can beat the two seed.
And my only Michigan problem State. With Ole Miss is I think they can beat the two seed, but I also think North Carolina, North Carolina and Ole Miss, that might be like a one-point spread in that game if that game actually comes up. I mean, talent-wise, North Carolina is not that much worse than Ole Miss. If you're looking for KenPom on that game, Ole Miss rated at plus 22.09 in net rating and North Carolina at plus 19.5. That would be a matchup between the 26th and 33rd best teams in the country, according to KenPom. So that would be an incredibly evenly matched game, which is why I don't like picking Ole Miss.
So, we refer to KenPom a lot, and you've got some KenPom stats that you've used in the past. I know you have a KenPom bracket. I assume your KenPom bracket results in all chalk this year because of the top-heavy dominance, all ones?
Yeah, it's all ones except for Texas Tech goes, I guess, to the Elite Eight in that bracket. St. John's does not go that far. But, you know, the KenPom bracket, I will say, once again, would have been pretty interesting if it was seeded a little bit differently because, again, Missouri is a 6 seed at 15 in KenPom, so they would be higher than Kentucky, A&M, Clemson, Purdue, who are all teams on higher seed lines, and Michigan and Oregon, who are all on higher seed lines than them. But they don't play them. They don't play Kentucky. They get Texas Tech, who is the highest rated 3 seed. So the KenPom upsets could be there, but they're not there. Gonzaga's the 9th best team in the country, according to KenPom, but they're an 8 seed, so of course they're not higher rated than any of the 1 seeds. Same thing with Maryland, who's very highly rated for a 4 seed. Doesn't matter because they're playing Florida, who's, again, second best team in the last 20 years, I think, on KenPom. So it's actually not as interesting as it normally is, just because of the fact that the 8 seeds, frankly, are the ones who are the ones that are ahead of the game when it comes to KenPom rating. But it doesn't matter because they all take on dominant 1 seeds in the second round. But then, you know, we talked about the South region and the West region in depth. I want to talk about the Midwest for a second. Houston and Gonzaga, that game is a winner easily to the Elite Eight game. There is no way in hell that Purdue or Clemson or McNeese or High Point is beating either of Houston or Gonzaga, and I'm very, very sure of that. The only issue for me, and this is why I have Houston, the reason why I have Houston in the Final Four is because I think none of the 4, 5, 12, 13 teams there can beat them. However, Gonzaga is the toughest second-round matchup for any of the one seeds. So I really don't like that one at all. Gonzaga, again, a very, very strong team. It trends in history. Like I said, there's never been a team that claimed a top two seed when being unranked in the preseason that made it past the Elite Eight, which Michigan State and St. John's fit that criteria in terms of not going too far. But the issue is that Gonzaga is the opposite of that. Gonzaga is a team that was rated very high in preseason as a national title contender and just kind of flopped this season. But now, because their resume is so weak, their talent level isn't as weak as their resume is. They are on a very, very dangerous seed line with Houston. However, I think Houston has what it takes to beat them, and I think they're going to beat them. I think that Houston, the fact that they're playing a 16 seed in the round before obviously makes it a lot easier, whereas Gonzaga is going to be in a battle with Georgia. Georgia has been playing well at the end of the season. Don't count them out. Gonzaga should win that game, but the way that Gonzaga has played all year long, I mean, you're looking at St. Mary's beat them on their own home floor and on the road. And on a neutral site game, it was like a 3 or 4 point game in the championship game of the WCC. St. Mary's is a 7 seed. They're not much better than Georgia. I mean, if Gonzaga's going to struggle against those teams, they lost at home to Santa Clara, who was nowhere near the tournament picture. Like, the talent level on Gonzaga is very high. It's higher than an 8 seed should be. But they have lost games this year to teams that they should not have lost to. Do not be shocked if Georgia comes out and wins that game because Gonzaga just doesn't play well in that game. They also have very limited three-point shooting options, whereas Georgia has a ton of good shooters. So I could totally see them winning that. And then, you know, you're looking at Purdue and High Point, I think, is kind of... probably I'd say High Point's the most likely 13 to win a game. But the problem is High Point doesn't play a lick of defense, and Braden Smith might score 50 points in that game. Braden Smith and Trey Kaufman Wren, if they, I don't know what the record is for most points by a duo in a tournament game, but they could probably set that in that game. I could see those two combining for 60 or 70 points, like, easily. And that sounds ridiculous, but the way they've been playing recently, I think against Michigan, I think Trey Kaufman Wren and Braden Smith took 65 to 70% of Purdue's shots in that game. And High Point's a bottom 100 defense in the country. One of the worst defenses in the tournament, if not the worst defense in the tournament. So Purdue's just going to score at will on this team. I could easily see Purdue scoring, pushing this game up into the 90s or into the 100s. Both teams like to play pretty, maybe not pretty fast, but High Point at an average pace, Purdue at a pretty fast pace. I think they could push that game into a 90 to 80 type game, and Braden Smith could have 40, Trey Kaufman Wren could have 30, and it would not shock me whatsoever. But then the problem is, McNeese is kind of a well-known factor, but Clemson's missing Dylan Hunter. They're missing their glue guy. So Clemson's injured. Purdue looks primed for a choke because they're overseeded, and overseeded teams tend to do worse in March Madness than underseeded teams or correctly seeded teams. Either of these teams could lose in the first round. I don't know what to do with that little mini section, but I think that's kind of a fun section of the bracket. And then you go down low and you see Illinois against Texas and Xavier. Texas can beat anybody. Texas has beaten Kentucky. Illinois has the highest potential of any of these teams, but has the lowest floor other than Troy in this entire region. And Kentucky already lost to a 14 seed last year, and they're injured. Lamont Butler, their point guard, has a shoulder injury. Did not play in the end of the SEC tournament after getting injured. And they also are missing Jackson Robinson, who's their best three-point shooter on the year. And he's out for the season. So Kentucky's banged up. Xavier is the best shooting team maybe in the tournament. I mean, they shoot like 42% from three as a team. They're a very dangerous shooting team. But they got to get by Texas first. And then you have Illinois, who is really just can beat anybody, can lose to anybody. So that's a really interesting region to me.
Do you think Tennessee has the easiest path to the Elite Eight out of any two seed?
I don't think they have the easiest path because I think they have one team who actually can play their bully ball style that they're playing, which is UCLA.
UCLA
is extremely comfortable in a 45-44 game, which is what that game is going to be. I will not be watching that game.
And
if
you think UCLA
is
making
game.
It for sure out of the
Yeah, I don't. Utah State's been playing horribly at the end of the season. So I think UCLA is going to capitalize on that pretty easily. I trust Mick Cronin to get at least a tournament win. But the thing with Tennessee is that I think one of the biggest things that can beat Tennessee is just a team that can flat-out score, and Illinois fits that description. And also, these teams played each other earlier in the season. Illinois lost by one on a buzzer beater so at home. So they're very, very evenly matched. And then if you look at Kentucky, that's a team that Tennessee got swept by on the season. So I think absolutely they can lose. I mean, they are 1-2 against teams in their region that they're likely to face. And they also arguably shouldn't have won one of the games they did. They did beat Texas when they played them this season, so I'll give them that credit. But they beat them 74-70, and then they beat them in the SEC tournament after the Longhorns had already played two games in a row. So I don't think that's really a fair indication.
So listening to you discuss this little, you know, pod of this region, you've named five teams that you think have a chance to make it to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I think there are five teams in the bottom that can make it to the Elite Eight, but I think that's why I like Houston here, because I don't think they're losing in the Sweet 16. I think Houston's toughest game in this entire region, honestly, is the second round against Gonzaga. I honestly think Houston would struggle more against Gonzaga than they would against Illinois or Tennessee or Kentucky, honestly. I just don't see it with Purdue either. And with Clemson, they're injured. This region has injured teams and a bunch of boring teams that can't score. This team has this region is a bunch of injured teams and boring teams that can't score. And Houston's number one strength is that Houston is still the best defensive team in the country. They're yes on KenPom at St. John's, but barely above Houston. And then Houston's a whole point better per 100 possessions than Tennessee is. So it's between St. John's and Houston. But they're in a region of a bunch of defensive teams, and that's what they love to do. And they're the best offensive. If you had told me that Houston is the best offensive team in the region, I would have called you insane. But the funny thing is they actually are. They are factually the best offensive team in this region. It's almost impossible to construct a region where Houston is the top offensive team, and yet it happened. I guess technically you could say Purdue's better than Houston offensively, but Purdue's defense is so bad that I don't think it really matters. And Kentucky, kind of same thing. So actually, funny enough, KenPom does have Purdue, Kentucky, and Gonzaga right ahead of Houston offensively, but all three of those teams, whereas Houston is the number two defense in the country and a top 10 offense, Purdue at 63 on defense, Kentucky at 57, and Gonzaga at 29. So I will easily take Houston over those teams. I just think that if you give them a region where they're even close to the best offensive team and they're way better than everybody else in their region on defense automatically, unless they had St. John's in their region, they just are able to go through it. But that is why I have the Final Four that I do. And again, I have Houston beating Texas Tech for the championship game. There's a potential for an Iron Bowl rematch, but instead I'm going with the Big 12 championship, or the best two teams of the Big 12 all year long.
See, now I had a different Final Four until listening to this podcast, and based upon what you just said, I had Houston losing to Tennessee, but I've changed that. So I'm pretty boring right now when I look at it. I've got Auburn, Florida, Duke, and Houston with a Duke-Florida national championship game and a Duke championship, just because I can't do the Florida thing.
My whole thing with Florida and with Duke is that there's two teams that have, I think 45-ish, 50-ish percent of the championship picks on ESPN, and one of them is led by a freshman with a sprained ankle, and the other one is led by really good guard play, which is what wins in March, and a very good coach, and a very balanced overall team, but they're just too popular for me.
That's what I have. In
a year that's so dominated by four teams at the top, I really think all of Florida, Auburn, Duke, and Houston can win it. And I mean, Auburn was the clear number one in the country for 85% of the year. But the problem is the 15% that they weren't the best team in the country were the 5% at the beginning of the year and the 10% at the end of the year, which right now they have lost three of four, and that has kind of knocked them off the top rung. And I think a lot of people had already started to value Duke over Auburn. But when it comes to tournament success, I just don't trust a bunch of freshmen to go out and win a title, especially when the whole universe thinks they're going to win.
So if you had to pick, I know I'm just getting you here without you thinking about this, so this little impromptu question. If you had to pick a number two seed, a non-number one seed, let's call it, a non-number one seed to win the tournament, who would it be?
Doesn't have Alabama in a heartbeat.
That's what I would say.
I mean, this is not, it's not a discussion. Yep. Alabama's the only team that has the balance. Tennessee, if you're going to be, well, I'll put it this way. The thing that wins in the tournament is that if you're going to be unbalanced, but you're going to be elite at one thing and not elite at the other, offense is the one that wins. Tennessee is an elite defense and not an elite. Obviously, they're a top five team, so they're still top 20 in offense. But Alabama is barely outside of the bounds for KenPom in terms of what you need to be on defense. They're 32nd. The bound is 31. But they're the fourth best offense in the country, whereas Tennessee barely inside of the bounds for the offense at 18th, but a very good defensive team at third. It's got to be between one of those two for sure, if you're talking two seeds only. Michigan State and St. John's both do not have anywhere near enough scoring. I think there's the rung of defensive teams. Tennessee is easily the best. They're a top 20 offense and a top 5 defense. Then you have Michigan State, who's a worse defense than Tennessee and a worse offense, pretty easily, honestly, and they also cannot shoot at all. And then you have St. John's, who also can't shoot and is way worse on offense than either of those teams, but is better on defense than both of them. But I think Tennessee by far is the most balanced of the defensive teams. But Alabama, their pace is just going to frustrate a lot of teams. They're really hard to play against. They're really hard to prep for in a two-day span. I think Wisconsin, they can try to run with Alabama, but it's not going to work. I mean, that's a team that, you know, everybody's talking about Wisconsin's pace this year and their increase from prior seasons. Wisconsin still, average possession length is 194th in the country. Tempo is 152nd. Alabama, meanwhile, is the fastest team in the country in adjusted tempo, and average possession length is fourth. So everybody wants to say that Wisconsin is playing at a quote-unquote fast pace this year. Fast for Wisconsin means average in the country because they used to be the slowest team in D1 pretty much on a consistent basis. They cannot, everybody's going to think that they can run with Alabama. They absolutely cannot run with Alabama. They have never played a team that plays as fast as Alabama does. And Alabama just, again, the pacing, they're led by, this is a Final Four team. I mean, they were a Final Four team last year, and they're led by the same point guard and a lot of similar pieces that were on that team last year. Grant Nelson's still there. Grant Nelson and Mark Sears was a Final Four duo last year. Don't see why it can't be a Final Four duo this year, especially when they're going to play a Duke team that has no experience whatsoever.
All right. Well, that wraps up our preview of the NCAA tournament. Let's now stay in basketball, but turn our attention to the NBA with our weekly review of NBA action.
This will be a little bit of an abbreviated review, obviously, with college basketball taking the reins. But the Cavs are in first in the East. I've never said that before on this podcast. They're 56-11. Their winning streak did come to an end. They had won 15 in a row, but the Magic were actually able to get the win over them. Probably the most surprising team to end that win streak that it could have been. But the dream is over. They're officially not going to go 72-10, but they could win the last 15 games of the season and end up 71-11 if they want to go on another quick 15-game winning streak before the season ends. Not out of the realm of possibility. They've already won 12 in a row, 14 in a row, and 15 in a row this year. They are pretty much clinched. They pretty much clinched the one seed as well. You got the Celtics behind them, 7.5 games at 49-19. The banged up Knicks are in third at 43-24. They just need to stay afloat without Jalen Brunson. The Bucks and the Pacers are still tied for the fourth and fifth spots at 38-29 each. Then the Pistons at 38-31 are well within the playoff conversation, 7 games above 500. Meanwhile, the seventh seeded Hawks are 32-36, 4 games under. So. 5.5 games back there for the Hawks. Then you have the Magic, like I said, just ended the Cavs' winning streak, but they are still 3-7 in their last 10, 32-37 overall. The Bulls have now moved up ahead of the Heat because the Bulls are 6-4 in their last 10, and the Heat have lost 8 games in a row. And the East is so bad that despite losing 8 games in a row and sitting at 29-39 on the season, the Heat are still in the play-in bracket and still 5.5 games ahead of the Raptors, who are the first team out at 24-45. Then the Nets are at 23-45, and so are the Sixers. Then the Hornets are at the bottom at 17-50, with the Wizards at the very, very bottom at 15-52. In the West, the Thunder have now clinched a playoff spot. They are 56-12 on the season, 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 3 in a row. The Rockets aren't far behind, though, nor the Nuggets. Those two teams tied for second at 44-25 for the both of them. They are 12.5 games back. The Thunder are going to get home field and clinch that pretty soon. But those are the 2 and 3 seeds. Then the Lakers and the Grizzlies are tied for the 4 and 5 spots at 42-25 and 43-26, respectively. The Lakers obviously trying to stay afloat without LeBron. Luka missing a game with injuries as well. So Lakers just trying to maintain ahead of the play-in bracket and then just hope that they end the season well enough. Maybe with LeBron coming back later to claim a 4 or 5 seed, maybe get home field in one series at least. Then you have the Warriors, who have been playing really, really well, 14-2 since the Jimmy Butler trade. But they did lose to the Nuggets last night, even though the Nuggets didn't have Nikola Jokic or Jamal Murray. So that was kind of an interesting loss for them to take, or Christian Brown either, actually. They had none of those three guys. But the Warriors, 39-29, still fine on the season, 8-2 in their last 10, like I said. 14-2 with Jimmy Butler. Then the Timberwolves are 40-30. They lost on a buzzer beater to the Pacers last night. Actually, 2 threes in the final 20 seconds or so by Obi Toppin for the Pacers to win that game. But the Timberwolves were on fire before that. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They are tied with the Warriors for that sixth spot. The Clippers, despite winning 3 in a row, are a game back of the Timberwolves. They're in the 8th seed at 38-30. The Kings just kind of hanging on at 5-5 in their last 10, but they're 34-33 overall. And the two teams behind them refuse to make a move, so the Mavs, who are ridiculously injured at the risk of forfeiting games later this season and are 2-8 in their last 10, they are 33-36, but they are still somehow in the playoffs because of the fact that the Suns are only 5-5 in their last 10 despite being fully healthy. They're 32-37, 1 game back. The Blazers are 3 games back at 30-39. The Spurs are 4 back at 28-39, but obviously very, very injured. De'Aaron Fox now shut down for the season as well as Victor Wembanyama. And then the two teams eliminated at the bottom, the Pelicans at 18-51, and the Jazz, tanking for flag, have lost 10 in a row at 15-54.
All right, well, that wraps our look back at the NBA for the last week. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 25th, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions and talk again about basketball with another weekly review of the NBA and a review of the first weekend of the NCAA basketball tournament. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday. Our content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on Twitter and Instagram, with additional content available on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening.